Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello. Hello, it's me, Sean Keaveney, and this is another episode of Sean Keaveney's Creative Cul-de-Sac, the Lost Ideas Symposium. The notebook explorer that is this particular podcast concept. We've done maybe 9 of them. And we're shuddering towards the end of this run now. And what you're about to hear is an incredible conversation I had with a good friend of mine. But I was a fan before I was a friend. I don't know if that makes it weird. Joe Lycett. Renaissance man. Comedian extraordinaire. Writer. Author. Consumer rights. Champion. General all-round good guy, just an amazing person, really an inspiration. So that's coming up, and that's very exciting. But I suppose this is technically slightly confessional, the front of this particular version of Sean Keaveney's Creative Cul-de-Sac, because when I first came up with this idea, getting on for 2 years ago now, certainly 18 months ago, you know, me sitting upstairs in my top room going through my colossal collection of unused ideas and then doing it with another person, I genuinely thought that I probably had like 7 or 8 decades worth of stupid ideas to play with. But I don't think that's the case at all. I think it was being massively hubristic. I don't think I've got anywhere near that. You may be witnessing a man's beginning to scrape the bottom of the barrel. It might be something to do with the bandwidth. I think there's been a lot going on recently. I think in the world, in my life, in your life, you know what I mean? Might be something to do with it. I probably say too much and I'm probably too honest. That's a problem that I've got. My breath stinks at the moment as well. You see, I do it. I can't help it. But you can't tell that. If you're just here for Joe Lycett and you've not heard any of the other podcasts, which you completely understand, you're thinking, what the fuck is this? When's Joe on? And what is this? As I say, the original idea was that this would be a modular podcast in 3 parts. The front bit, me going through my old ideas. The middle bit, me and the guest. The end bit, me going through some of the listeners' lost, hilarious, ridiculous ideas that they wrote down in a notebook or stuck on the iPad somewhere 9 years ago. That's what this is. And so to that end, I have had a little deep dive onto my hard drive, actually, and found, I think, to be some quite interesting material, stuff that either very few people have heard or nobody's heard. It's my favourite sort of material for this podcast. And I can barely remember even doing this, but there's a file on my computer entitled Travel and Marketing Awards 2013. And if anybody was there that might be listening, I doubt it very much, actually. That's a very unlikely Venn diagram. But I do believe that I was the presenter of the Travel and Marketing Awards somewhere in Covent Garden, perhaps, in 2013. And I've got a bit of material that I used that night that I think is quite good. So I'm going to deliver it. And as I've done on subsequent podcasts, this is technically stand-up. I don't know, Ben, if you can be asked, if you've got access to the sound effects library, if you want to do what you've done before, you know, like put a bit of echo on my voice, but a tiny little smattering of not very enthusiastic laughter and applause in the background, it might help. So, but this was the first, this is part of the first sort of opening gambit of my intro to the Travel and Marketing Awards. Nice to get to do the Travel and Marketing Awards. I love travel. I'm a bastard for travel, me. Recently, I was looking for somewhere to take me and my wife for a city break. This is me and my first wife, by the way. So this dates it to about 10 years ago. We've had a hard time recently, you know, and I wanted to treat us. And I looked at the usual places you might take your spouse, you know, Amsterdam and Barcelona. But then I considered Belfast. Well, you know, they've had the troubles and so on. Well, what I did notice when I was looking was that Belfast Airport has been renamed the George Best International Airport. Yeah. And I know that he was a footballer blessed with mercurial genius, but let's face facts, he was also crippled with alcoholism. His life was deeply troubled. And I thought, it seems a strange choice to name your international airport after somebody so flawed. Until you realise it, an international airport is the only place in the world where it is completely normal and acceptable to have an export lager and a whiskey chaser at 6 o'clock in the morning. A bit of laughter there. Can't remember how that went down. I was 14 before I went abroad for the first time. That's true. 14! That pegs me as working class scum. I can hear the posher people in the audience saying, but Daddy took me to Chamonix skiing at the age of 3. You know, you privileged bastards. I thought Chamonix was a condition that washerwomen contracted after polishing too many steps. Not only did I have to wait till I was 14 to go abroad, I had to book a week off work from Dunk Pit to go as well. Class war. It's about time we had a class war, isn't it, in all seriousness. That last bit wasn't part of the routine, I just threw that in at the end. And I do like this, I don't remember doing this at all, but while I was at the Travel and Marketing Awards, I pitched them some ideas, some marketing ideas for different countries, like strap lines and stuff. So I'm going to Rolodex through some of those for you because I think they're quite good. So these are the strap lines for these particular destinations that I'm proposing. Go to Antarctica while it still exists. Gran Canaria, the poor man's Caribbean. London, expensive shithole. Australia, the land of potential bar persons. New Zealand, ask them to say fish and chips. Ayia Napa, let someone else be sick on you for a change. Limassol, I like this one. Get limassoled. It's good, isn't it? Phuket, just Phuket. Phuket! Exclamation mark. Anyway, so that's, you can see, you know, we're in our fuel big time here, aren't I? It's bad news. But this, then I found this, and I'm thinking, hang on, there's something in this idea. This is a great documentary idea, and I'm going to read this out to you. This is a very short proposal page that I've put together for a documentary. Radio has been a part of the fabric of our lives since the late 19th century. In the interim period, radio has flourished in every conceivable corner and cranny of world culture. Despite a myriad of technically more impressive technologies intended for entertainment, radio remains perhaps the most personal, lovable and pervasive communication medium on the globe. This is about a decade ago before podcasts re-entered the picture. Now, thanks to the internet, cute, isn't it? Radio stations are more ubiquitous than ever. And where there's ubiquity, there's ridiculity. NB, this is a made-up word that happens to scan better than ridiculous. It doesn't. And so this is the title of the documentary, Radio Gaga. Radio Gaga hopes to plumb the depths, soar the heights, skim the barrel, and trumpet to the triumphs of the weirdest and most wonderful radio stations on the planet. I like this idea. I just like the idea of being sent around the world and being paid for it, and like chatting to people at radio stations, which is the idea, basically. The wonders of wavelength-related wackery are revealed to anyone with an available Google search bar. Check out 12 Step Radio, a station which plays songs about drinking and the havoc alcohol can play with people's lives. I think I did a bit of research and this is true. With the emphasis on recovery songs to encourage people to stay sober. For the more Antipodean-minded, there's a resonant thrill of the 24-hour Didgeridoo Fest radio station, Radio Didgeridoo. That's apparently real as well. The aim of the programme is much more than hollow mockery. Presented by radio obsessive and saved Six Music presenter Sean Keaveney, this show will hopefully be respectfully pitched. Look, I doubt it. Looking deep into the stories and motivations of those involved in the world's most unusual radio stations. That said, it's going to be hard not to find a few chuckles at Radio Titan, the hard trance radio station that claims to broadcast from the Saturnian moon of the same name. Apparently that's a real radio station. Probably not open anymore. I like that idea though, Radio Gaga, like going around the world, visiting the most extreme and oot radio stations and talking to them about it. Sort of thing, Louis Farouk's probably done it, or he's probably just about to do it, and he'd do it better. Talk myself out of another job there. Oh dear. Finally, I'm going to hit you up with, do you remember I told you that me and my mate Steve tried to be TV sketch writers for a little while back in 2001, and I got one of them made on the Karen Dunbar show about a jazz singer who never sung. This is out of the same pile, and I think it's heavily influenced by a Bill Hicks sketch, but let's not talk about that. The sketch is called Driving on Acid. Two policemen sitting in their patrol car on a hard shoulder. I'm not reading this out incidentally because I think it's for that funny. Desperation. A car flashes past them at great speed. They pursue it. Eventually, they catch up with the car and get it to pull over. Officer One steps out of the car purposely and strides up to the offending vehicle. We see a man inside the car. He looks hassled and impatient. He winds his window down and stares at the approaching policeman. Yes, can I help you? I'm in quite a hurry. We've just clocked you doing 113 miles per hour. That's my best patronising policeman voice. Not that any of them have ever sounded like that. I've been pulled over a few times. Anyway, the man says, indeed, I was. Yeah, and there's a very good reason why I'm in such a hurry. And what might that be, sir? I've just taken a huge amount of acid and I'd very much like to get home before it kicks in. Now, if you'll excuse me, Officer Zippy, I should better be off before it starts to take effect. And we see the officer then from the man's perspective. It is a Zippy in a policeman's uniform, complete with Bobby's helmet, waving him off saying goodbye. A final shot sees the officer looking on aghast as the man waves at him with a beatific smile on his face as he pulls away. It's sort of, there's something in that, I think. And a little bit of that made me chuckle. But not enough, I don't think. So there you go. I mean, luckily, the person that you're about to hear from, Joe Lycett, is a man who is a completer. He is a man who has made such a roaring success of the comedic oeuvre that it makes me just proud, actually. Not even sick to know him, and because he uses his power in such fantastic ways. So what you're about to hear, this wonderful conversation with Joe, will wash away the terrible taste of that particularly ropey sketch from 2002 about a man driving on acid. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the creative cul-de-sac dipping in to the incredible mind, the 7/8 of the iceberg, the unused ideas of Mr. Joe Lycett. Joe Harry Lycett, born 5th of July 1988, is a British comedian, television presenter. He has appeared on TV shows, including Live at the Apollo, Taskmaster, Nevermind the Buzzcocks, 10 Cats, QIs, the announcer on Saturday, BBC One Show, Epic Win. This is off Wikipedia, this. Forget that. We know all about that. I've written instead a very quick celebratory poem. Vivacious, joyous, wondrous and scabrous, hilarious, multifarious and totally fabulous. If he sold plates, I'd buy a set. It's our friend and yours, it's Joe Lycett.
Scabrous.
Scabrous.
S-C-A-B-R-O-U-S. Define scabrous. Rough. Sorry. Rough and covered with, or as if with scabs. Example, his face was scabrous and lumpy.
No. Look at number two. Okay. Indecent,
scabrous,
salacious.
Detailed included being regularly right. seen with a
scabrous
mistress.
Detailed.
Okay, I'll have that one. Thank yes. you, matey.
That's it.
Regularly
that's
seen
exactly
with a mistress.
That's exactly what came up
Woo!
On my phone as well.
Lovely. What a start.
Oh, it's good. Thanks for being on the cul-de-sac, my old shoe. It's lovely to talk
it's
to you.
It's lovely to talk to you as well. Are you well? Are you in high spirits? As high as Sean's spirits can get?
Not really. I've got to be honest with you. My mental health's been up and down like a bride's nightie. You know, it's been... Oh! But then everybody's hasn't it? With all the things that are going on, it's terribly difficult.
Yeah,
to
it certainly you... is. And I've noticed my libido is as close to zero as it's ever been. And I've noticed quite a few of my friends are the same. And I think there's this sort of sense of, why bother? Like, what? Is there any point in doing anything?
And as you ask, I'm sitting here, for the interest of the listener, we can see each other, Joe and I, because we're on one of these like posh things where we can see each other, like a FaceTime type deal. But I'm looking out at my top floor window, and I can see Dollis Hill in all its splendor, in a sort of bathed in a golden mid to late afternoon light. And it's been like one of the first warm, properly warm days.
Very nice.
And look, I've come in my shorts, but I've barely been out in it. So I'm desperate. You know, really, I'm like a caged animal. What are you? Are you like a man of the great outdoors, Joe, would you say? This has got nothing to do with the podcast. This
well,
is just
warming
up.
One thing I could say about your room behind you is, would it kill you to put a picture up?
No, that's why...
No wonder your mental health's bad. You're in a complete isolation from any colour.
Yes.
Or any inspiration.
It's a shithole.
Oh, you've got one picture. What's this?
It's a shithole. My wife is desperate. She's like, look, Sean, one of the reasons I married you and I love you is because you're a creative guy and I love the fact that you're musical and you've got 14 guitars and you've got an electric drum kit. But you barely use the amp and pedals and you barely use the electric drum kit. And it's just, this room is like a sort of shit music shop. Like you say, with no pictures really, just lots of piles of admin. But there is this picture. I don't know if you can see this.
Yeah, so it's a sort of sullen man sat on a chair thinking to himself. And next to him is a dog thinking to the dog's self. And the dog's thinking, at least the dog loves me. And the dog's thinking... the man's thinking, at least the dog loves me. And the dog's thinking, wanker.
I love that. I actually bought that in John Lewis. But it made me laugh.
Wow, that's quite risque for John Lewis, isn't it? Wanker.
I thought it was a little bit, never knowingly undersoiled. Look, this is an expo of lost ideas. I mean, you're a very productive and proactive person. You put out loads of great stuff. But we wonder what that 7/8 of the creative iceberg, what is there, Joe? When you have an idea, what do you do? Do you reach for a notebook like Hemingway, or do you jot it on your phone? Do you scribe it in Sanskrit on papyrus? What do you do?
So I go onto this phone, and I used to be on Evernote, and I still have my Evernote because I've had that for years, but I found it to be clumsy and not always brilliant. So Evernote's like a kind of online note-taking app. Now I use Google Docs, and I just have a Google Doc in my phone called, I've lost it now, Ideas Tour 2022. Now, that actually has been the same document for 4 years, because I've been working on this tour for about 4 years. So,
have you really?
So it's actually every idea. It's not even just a stand-up ideas. It's just like, I'll put in there like, sidebar idea for a painting. It'll be that sort of thing. And then when I'm feeling like I haven't got stuff. Like, for example, painting idea here. You know, lads will say, oh, he's got a dick like a baby's arm. You know, when they're saying like, oh, he's got a big, thick knob.
Yeah.
I've got an idea of a painting, which is someone who's got arms like a baby's dick. I need to do it, actually. I think that's quite a funny idea. So it's just like, rather than a dick like a baby's arm, just these little tiny penis arms.
So please do that. Do that tonight. Oh, look at him. He's got arms like a baby's dick.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just slightly just getting it
tiny
wrong.
Tiny little like T-Rex.
Yeah.
Well, do you do a lot of that? Because I know that obviously your paintings are well-renowned. You know, there's so many different sort of funny ideas that you can render in. I mean, do you use oils? What's your preferred medium?
No, I find oils really difficult, actually. You have to really know what you're doing with oils and watercolors. I use acrylics, and I've started using these new acrylics that are called acrylic gouache. I've got one here. They're acrylic gouache, and they go down a bit more flat and matte. And they, because normal acrylic, you put it down and then it's quite thick and it takes a bit of time for it to sort of dry. And if you put another colour on top of it, it will inevitably mix with the colour.
Okay.
Whereas this, that will happen a bit, but a lot less. So you can work a lot quicker. And I'm impatient as a creative, so I find them to be much more to my taste. So I only really use those. And I paint just sort of... it's really my escapism, I suppose, and my happy quiet time. And I love painting, and I love colour and sort of gauche colour. I'm not someone to sort of go subtle. I like loads of stuff.
It's very expressive. And we had Jim Moyer on this programme
weeks
back. And I see, in my mind's eye, you occupy a similar space, actually, because you are comedians that paint, but you don't seem to just dabble in paint. You seem to take it, I don't say quite seriously, I'm sure you do it with a light touch, and a lot of it's comedic, but you do seem to take it seriously as an art form.
Definitely do. I don't take anything particularly seriously, because it's all nonsense, isn't it? And so I'm not someone who kind of dwells on perfection and wants to get things absolutely right. I do it for the joy of it and try and do most of the things in my life for that purpose. Otherwise, it sort of seems a bit pointless to me. I often wonder about this sort of thing of legacy of like, you know, I must leave an extraordinary work for the people after me to remember me as this extraordinary. But most of the time, creating like an extraordinary work like that is just horrible and like really arduous and makes you sad and cross and all that.
Makes you an asshole to be around.
And it makes you horrible to be around and just, Whereas I just
imagine what Michelangelo would have been like.
Oh, you know, hanging out with that dickhead. Mike, take a day off, Mike. Have a pint. Sit down. Yeah. It's finished.
Yeah, exactly. Standing underneath the scaffolding with two double-fisting pints. Like that. I've got you one!
Yeah, the cock's a bit small. Fine, nobody minds. Get down the pub, Mike. Speaking of cocks, this was sent to me by an artist called Oliver Kane, and he makes bananas in like ceramic. It's just sat on my... Isn't that weird? And it's got... You can put it on the wall. Like, you can sort of stick it on the wall like that.
And so is that a cast of a banana...
I hope so. Yeah, it looks banana-y at the end. If that's the end of your knob, then sort of. You're wandering into a medical emergency, aren't you? Yeah.
I'd love to see that. You could. Here's an idea.
Yeah.
You could do plaster casts, like they used to do, the GTRs used to do this in the 60s, Frank Zappa's Mothers of Invention, all that, that some of the ladies would do plaster casts of rock stars' penises.
Wow.
Sometimes erect, sometimes not. But I thought you could do that. You could reinvent that idea, and you could turn the penis, and you could have the balls, but you could have them wall mounted, and have the penis pointing upwards, and then you could use them as coat hooks.
That's a lovely idea. Would you put yourself up for the first coat hook? And follow up question: what kind of coat do you think yours could take? Are we talking, is it a light jacket? Or are we talking like, you know, a big fur number? Because I've got a lot of heavy coats.
A wet duffel coat, I think. I'd have no problem holding that up. Oh, stop. What are we blundered into now?
Yeah, yeah.
It's me. You're about to hear an advert. Now, if you want to listen to the podcast ad-free and my Friday radio show... All you got to do is sign up to the Patreon if you fancy, not if you don't. But if you do,
The link is in the episode notes. Carry on.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So what else do I can't wait to see the tour, which is now imminent, isn't it?
It's started. I'm on it.
Has it begun?
It's begun. I've done two weeks now, but I'm only doing two or three shows a week. So I've done Plymouth and Bournemouth, and they were both lovely. And then I've got Edinburgh Edinburgh this weekend.
Okay, right. So that I'm going, by hell or high water, I'm going to be there because I fell down a Joe Lycett hole earlier today in the under the guise of research, and just end up spending about 2.5 hours just watching your stand-up, which is just always, all those things I said, joyous and hilarious, but also there's a real undertow of caring about shit. Which I really love. But what other things? I mean, I just love going back to people's notes and saying, what else have you jotted down? I'm imagining that you are the kind of person who sometimes, I mean, you've written books. Are there book ideas, sitcoms, you know, motivational quotes? What kind of things do you jot down?
I would love to write a book. I'm actually working on a book at the minute. So I wrote a book years ago. 5-6 years ago, maybe more, which was a sort of collection of some sort of email correspondence over the years. And I really enjoyed that process, and I felt very honoured to have a published book out. But there were parts of the process that I found difficult. And as someone who really likes visual arts, I really struggled with the it's not corner cutting, it's just efficiency of being published by a big publisher. They use cheap stuff, essentially. You know, they make it out of the cheapest paper or maybe not the cheapest, but you know, it's not high quality stuff. It's done to a kind of spec that they can do lots of copies of, and I totally get that. But it didn't scratch the itch that I was expecting it to do, which is I really wanted to make something really beautiful, because I used to do graphic design a lot. I used to do, I did posters for lots of comics and made websites for people, and I loved all of that. And I love a font, and I love digital artwork. And so I've always wanted to like make a really lovely book. And so I just realized actually it was a sort of lockdown thing of like, well, I'm just going to have to do it then, aren't I? I'm sort of doing it from the Sean approach of like just doing it myself and the people will come. So I'm making a book, which is a book of photography of bins, which I've been doing for years, taking photos of bins because I love bins. And it's going to be 1,000 copies, and each copy will be quite expensive to produce, probably in the region of £50 per copy, because it's going to have multiple paper types, multiple like foiling, the cover's going to look like a bin bag using different foil types, black foil that's going to be layered over each.
Wow.
And like I've got these sample, like I love it, so in my studio where I am now, I like fill it with stuff to inspire me and whatever. And there's this company called Foil Co. that make all these foils that you can press into things and whatever. And look at this sexy foil. This is black. Gorgeous. Holographic. Ooh. And it looks bin baggy, but like a gay bin bag. And I'm going to use a bit of that and a bit of standard black foiling. And I just love it. So yeah, it will be like 1,000 copies, very exclusive, all signed and numbered, and all about bins. And so,
what a high concept that
is! It's so silly, isn't it?
It's so lovely that the sort of something very expensive, very coffee table, very, you would be thinking Bauhaus, or you would be thinking or maybe a Roxy Music coffee table book, but that kind of level of detail, but about bins.
Yeah.
That's so great.
It's really fun.
And so will there be actually photographs?
Yeah.
Beautiful photographs of like wheelie bins and different kinds of bins.
Yeah, I can't show you, but I've got a wall of bins in front of me, and I've, out of hundreds, maybe thousands of pictures of bins, I've selected my favourite 80 bins. Because there's only space for... Well, I think there's maybe 84 or something. I've forgotten the exact number. And yeah, there's just tons. In fact, I could probably show one on my phone to you to give you an idea of the gist. I think they're very nice photographs myself, but you know, I would say that, wouldn't I? Wouldn't I say that? Hang on, I'll show you one of my absolute favourites, because there's some of the bins around Borough Market have got like coffee cup holder slots. So they look like they've got a, like they're smiling at you. Look how fun that bin is.
Oh, that's nice. He's got like two eyes, coffee cup eyes, and then a big slot for a mouth.
So he's one of my favourites. And then it's like just, you know, it's all very wanky and arty, but they're all just bins. Just, that's one in Starbucks, which has bin written on it, just in case you don't know what it is.
Have you got a title for it yet?
Bins.
Bins. Good. I'm glad you said that. I thought he was going to be a bit, high, you know, clever about it, but I like bins. That's what it says on the bin.
Bins. It's just bins.
But that's an idea that's happening, right? That's a thing you've brought to fruition. Right. What about an idea that you've got that you've noted down that hasn't gone anywhere, but you think, oh, maybe there's something in that?
Tons. God, there's tons. So I would love to do like a sitcom-y scripted thing. And I started writing one, but it's so hard. It's really... I'm just looking through the notes and there's another painting idea. And I can sort of picture this, but I must have written this down when I was in the middle of the night. A knife that can cut itself.
Right.
And I think the idea is that it's the blade sort of curves around and is cutting through itself. I think that's the idea. I just wanted to sort of see what it looks like. I'm going to see if I can draw it now. To kind of...
It reminds me of a sort of... What are those... drawings that a bit like the Escher staircase or something like that, whatever it's called. I can just imagine that, a knife turning around on itself and slicing itself.
I mean, it's quite hard to draw, really. I mean, this is not great paper to do it on. It's a mess, isn't it? That is an absolute mess. It would take me a while to work that out, but I like the idea of a knife being able to cut itself, but that's very much the sort of thought you have at 3 a.m. in the morning. Speaking of which, my favourite all-time midnight or sleeping thought is my old flatmate Ben is a brilliant ideas man, constantly coming up with amazing ideas that I often find absolutely hysterical. And he came up with, in the middle of the night, he woke up and he was like, oh my God, I've come up with it. This is the best idea I've ever had. And he jotted it down in this notepad he's got next to his bed and fell back to sleep really happily. Couldn't wait to wake up the next morning to get working on this extraordinary idea that he'd had. Opened his notepad in the morning and all it said was, narrow Elvis.
Narrow Elvis.
What he has no idea. He has no idea what narrow Elvis means.
Isn't it a shame when that happens, though? It's
this is it.
He thought that that was going to be enough. That kernel of the idea would immediately reawaken his mind into this brilliant thought that he'd had. And it's like, narrowboat Elvis? I don't know.
Narrow Elvis. He still doesn't know anything anything about it. And doesn't have a clue.
What about... I mean, because one of the things that you mentioned, the book, which was... and the ideas that you've carried throughout your career a lot so far, which is that sort of in the fight for the everyman, you know, like Joe Lycett's got your back, you know, like a sort of sexy watchdog, that idea of punching up, of speaking truth to power and stuff. What do you remember when the first time you had that idea, or the first letter that you wrote that you knocked out to? And to who it was, and what set that whole process going for you?
Yeah, it was Birmingham City Council, actually, because they'd given me... It was a parking fine one, and they'd given me a parking fine on the Christmas Eve. And I'd just parked in the city centre, guessed it was Christmas Eve, and thus Christmas Eve is surely a... You know, you're not paying for parking on Christmas Eve, are you? Didn't even look, and they fined me for that. So I sent a very... what's the word? Sarcastic letter of disapproval and fury to Birmingham City Council, which sort of garnered a few retweets, essentially. I remember, I think it might have ended up in the Birmingham Mail, but I remember Jenny Eclair liked it or retweeted it, and I remember being like, oh, that's cool, because I love Jenny Eclair. And so, you know, I noticed that, you know, it was doing a bit of business on Twitter. And so, and I found it really fun to write and very easy to write, just being kind of righteous and angry towards bureaucracy. And so just started doing more of it, really. And then it kind of became quite an integral part of my stand-up and my work for a long time. And it sort of still is a little bit.
Am I right in saying that, because I've not yet come to see it, but we've talked a little bit about it before, unless it's changed since, but it's the current stand-up, it's not a spoiler, is it, to say that it's a bit meta? It's a little bit about, it's something to do with raising your house price in a slightly Derren Brown-y way.
Yes.
But then with hilarious and possibly emotional consequences.
Exactly that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, essentially the show is about getting my house price up in Birmingham. But I obviously, as you say, I go to sort of slightly unusual places with it. And then it ended up by accident sort of becoming this extraordinary story, which has sort of changed my life, I suppose. And it's become this like fascinating exploration into people and my local community. And yeah, it was, but it's really fun. Like it's the key thing with any stand-up show for me is it has to be funny. It doesn't matter whether you're telling a, you know, just a few jokes or a few comic stories, or whether you're telling a sort of longer form story like I am in this one, it needs to justify itself by being funny. So it's I think a funny show, but I'm very proud of it, but it's sort of evolved naturally from that work.
That's
it's really lovely.
I just can't wait. Yeah. I mean, do you find, because the way you present your stuff, it is just so, there's so much joy and silliness in it. It's gorgeous, and but there's a lot of, or certainly in the past, there's been a lot, like we've just been touching on, of interaction with other people, sometimes with the bureaucratic agencies, sometimes with real people. We only see the fun side. Do you see the sort of darker side of social media as well sometimes, or are you happily kind of separate from that a little bit, or does it affect you ever?
No, I see it all the time as people, I mean, these days Twitter is constantly pretty much people, and I was very lucky with it for a long time. I was in the early days, people were just nice to me, and then occasionally you get a few people, which you always will, saying, oh, you're not funny or you're shit, whatever, and that's fine. But it became a lot more the other way, and I sort of, Twitter particularly, I sort of steer clear of slightly, because you just don't know how things are going to be responded to now. And, you know, if you're not having... I'm totally one of these people who just thinks, if you've got an opinion, you want to drop it out, fine, by all means. You know, free speech and all that. But I don't have to put myself in that situation to read it when I've just woken up, or when I, you know. No. So I try to preserve my mind a little bit more than I used to, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, definitely get a lot more than I used to. But I suppose that might just be a natural part of like being a bit more in the public eye. I suppose it's a little bit of that. And most of the time, I don't care. You know, I find it kind of funny when people sort of say, "Oh." The classic is like, you know, if somebody says something like comedian Joe Lycett, and then someone will reply to that going like, oh, I think you need to go to Trading Standards about the definition of the word comedian. You know, it's that sort of, I thought comedians meant to be funny. All of those things. It's like, I found that very funny when people used to say that about other comics, and I find it pretty funny when they do it about me, because it's sort of, just because you don't find something funny doesn't, it's sort of irrelevant, really. But it's so predictable. So no, I don't really let it like affect me particularly, and I set boundaries for how much I'm exposed to of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you've got to protect yourself a bit, haven't you?
I do, yeah. But generally, I find it's like fine, you know.
Yeah.
I I'm very fortunate that I essentially spent most of my life just making stuff. If I find it funny, showing it to other people, and often they find it funny, and repeating that. And that's like amazing. What a ridiculous, fortunate, lovely life to have had. And if it all falls to shit now, the first 33 years were pretty good, I'd say, actually, in that regard.
I don't predict that in the near future. So let's go back to your notes, just whatever screed, stream of consciousness, idiocy, weirdness. I don't care what it is. I just want to hear, I want to climb inside your mind, Joe, and find out what's going on in there.
Right, let's have a little look. I've gone all the way back to the very start to see. Here's an idea that I'd love to action, but I don't quite know. And I looked into the legalities of it. Have you been to the Tate Modern recently?
Yeah. Not recently.
There's like a viewing gallery they opened in the last few years. I'd probably say 5 years ago, which it's very nice. It's sort of on one of the higher floors of the Tate. But it overlooks these flats that have gone up, I think, more recently. No, I think the flats were there, and then the Tate opened a viewing gallery. And you can basically, it's a public gallery, and the Tate Modern's so busy, and there's people on there the whole time. So essentially, your flat is just being looked into by everyone at the Tate all day. And they're big glass flats as well, so it's like you either have to kind of live in darkness or just accept that you're essentially in a goldfish bowl. And I know that the residents had sort of kicked off a little bit about it, and the Tate just sort of basically went, stars, bye, you know, and didn't really, don't care. And I was thinking, like, if I was a resident, how would I solve this problem? And I realised that you have to do something in the flat that makes them close the viewing gallery, essentially. And so I basically thought I would hire gay porn stars to just come and make a film every day in my flat until they stopped the viewing gallery being open, essentially. So I looked into the legalities of that and whether that was possible. And apparently it's not, because if you are doing something, if you're naked or doing something obscene, even if it's on your property, if it can be viewed from a public place,
Christ,
you are still breaking indecency laws. So if you if you decide to sort of smash one out of the window and somebody can see it from downstairs, then you're still breaking the law.
You're the one breaking the law. I just love that idea of that.
Yeah,
have some of that.
Yeah.
Enjoy your cake, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Enjoy your cake.
Here's some art for you.
Oh, that naked one's in the National Gallery. Have some of that.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that you checked on the legals as well, because that's the thing I think was quite inspiring about you. A lot of us, you take it to that next sort of level. Could I actually do this? Could I action this? I like the idea of what you... If I had one of those flats, probably what I would do, and I had like a floor-to-ceiling window, is I would make an enormous frame, like a picture frame, and put it around my floor-to-ceiling window.
Oh.
And without the sex bit, I would just keep my blinds open at all times, and I would say, hey guys, my life is a canvas.
Yeah, really nice.
Check me out. I'm art as well.
A bit like Darren Brown did when he suspended himself in that Perspex box over the...
Was it him? Oh, no, it wasn't. It was the other one. Blaine, wasn't it?
Sorry, David Blaine. David Blaine, sorry.
That's right. You're right. It's the same kind of thing. Okay, what I can't remember about that, which is surprising to me, because I was obsessed with it. I was just starting in radio at that time, and I think David gave me a lot of material around that time, because you could take the piss quite hard, couldn't you?
Because
he was quite a risible character as well as impressive.
Yeah.
But what did he used to do? Did he used to shit in carrier bags and stuff like that? I can't remember how he dealt with all that.
I don't know. I think he didn't do loads. I don't think he ate very much.
I don't think
he was shitting, but pissing he must have done somewhere. Do you know what? I'm going to have a little look. David Blaine, box, London.
Excretion.
44 days, he must have done a few pisses and at least a shit or two in that time.
Yeah, he's
Do you know what? He had a like a blanket over him and stuff. So I reckon he was fine.
He was probably knocking one out every so often as well, wasn't he?
He experienced blurred vision, hallucinations, and a roller coaster of emotion. It's from The Independent.
But you're right. It's that kind of thing. It's your life as art is what we're saying, and that's what the springboard was, the idea of gay porn.
Yeah,
forcing the closure of the Tate Modern's viewing platform / outdoor space.
Yeah,
which is a brilliant idea.
Because I find a lot of those, like, I mean, the Tate Modern's good fun, isn't it? And they've got some good stuff in there. But I find like the people around the art world, and I imagine, I mean, I've not met that many, but I can just guess what the sort of people that run the Tate Modern are like. And I imagine there's a lot of turtlenecks and actually not that much. I imagine they live in somewhere like Surrey and they don't laugh at comedy shows. They say, oh, yeah, that's funny.
Yeah,
that's right. They're that sort of person. They don't actually just laugh.
I can see why that's hilarious.
Yes, we could do something with this.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Twin set and pearls.
Yeah.
Are you on the edges of the art world sometimes, though? I know you've done stuff.
Sort of, but I have no desire to, like, be in a gallery. And I just make my art, and then I make prints of it, and I sell them directly to the people that want them. And there's no middleman. I don't want a gallery. I don't want an exhibition necessarily. I did one with my mum, which I loved. And maybe I'd do something like that again. I think it'd be quite interesting to do. I did have an idea to do an exhibition. There's a painting. Well, there's a few paintings I've done. Actually, if I tilt the screen up, you can see. Can you see that one there of Alan Sugar?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he's like looking through a skylight. And actually, if you look behind these two, I did one of a cat. So that's a cat that sit like lying on a skylight.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, so you're looking up from underneath.
So it's as if you're underneath the skylight and he's like lying across like that.
That's brilliant.
And I think it'd be really fun to do an exhibition of things through skylights. So you kind of like, it's completely white walls or whatever, wherever the space is. And it's only when you look up, you can see the paintings because they're all in skylights.
That's a good idea.
But you've got to do quite a few of them, haven't you? But yeah, so there'd be a cat, Alan Sugar, maybe a man with dicks for arms. Trying to climb off the roof with his little dick arms.
Dick arms. You could do one of the builders doing the extension opposite me. That would be a good one because they're on the roof at the moment.
Yeah.
So you could have a couple of builders sort of looking down. Mm. That would be a nice one.
Yeah.
Or you could do one of my old flat, which had very big skylights, but just covered in shite and moss.
Lovely. Yeah.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
That's really nice,
It's just another great idea from the mind of Joe Lycer. I've got a bone to pick with you as well. Can you please stop picking on Shell? Because those poor shareholders have got enough on the plate, Joe. You know, they're wondering what to spend their $19.3 billion of profit on without being distracted by you having a pop at them.
No, you're absolutely right there. And I apologise. I've been needlessly critical of them actually, because they, as you say, their shareholders don't deserve that.
No.
And also Ben Van Burden, who runs it, he says, he's got kids and whatever, and he says, believe me, I worry about the future for my daughters and I want to, have a nice future for them. And then I imagine he thinks, and that's why when I get my multi-million dollar bonus, I don't worry about them as much anymore, because I imagine they'll inherit some of that. And then when they, buy Russian oil at the start of a war with Russia, I think, no, they're just looking after us and making sure that we can keep going. They're good eggs, I'd say. Yeah. Really good eggs.
It's all from a lovely place, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I would trust them with all the altruism of the world. And actually, I don't think anyone needs to be doing anything good anymore because Shell's got it covered.
They're being such loves. Joe, I don't know what to say, really. It's just always a good any excuse to have a chat.
Well, I'd love to have a pint at some point, please, Sean.
God, I'd love a pint. We had a nice pint,
cold,
didn't we?
We had a lovely one last summer, didn't we?
Yeah, it's too long ago now, so we do have to make that happen.
We do.
But, I mean, I suppose now we have to work it out. When, so you, the tour is on now.
Tour's on now, yeah, and goes till September. And I mean, if you, it's, I'm, you're a busy man, Sean, but if you, you know, want to come along and have a make, because what we do is we do like a kind of, normally we'll like arrive on the Friday, do the show on the Friday night, and then on the Saturday we'll do like some sort of activity in the local area. So in Bournemouth, we like swam in the sea, and then we went for a little walk, and then we went to Rick Stein's restaurant, and it was all delicious and it was brilliant, but the food came out slightly later than my tour manager hoped for, because he was a very hungry boy. And he kept saying, they don't call him Quickstein. And I found, he must have done that a dozen times, and I found that so funny. It's so shit. that it sort of went out the other side, and I found it so funny. And then we'll have a little nap, and then we'll do the show again. And it's so nice to do it with, like, I'll normally have my tour manager, Harry, who's very funny, and whoever the support act is, who will also be funny, because all my support acts are very funny. And then whoever, you know, any waifs and strays that want to come and join for a nice day somewhere, we would love to have you. So have a little look, see where you go. Oh, maybe you go, oh, I'd love to hang out in Ipswich. Come and hang out in Ipswich with Mummy and all of the Mummy's friends.
I might do that, because I've only been to Ipswich once in 1997 and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I'd like to go back 25 years later. I might tap up my friend Paul, who lives near Ipswich, and we'll come on. We'll hitch our wagons onto the Lycett Fun Train.
There you go. You could do Sheffield. You could do Glasgow, Stockton, Newcastle. Speaking of Newcastle, if anyone's listening to this and they live in the Newcastle area or within 300 miles of Newcastle, the Newcastle Arena sales are so worrying.
What's the date on the Newcastle? What's the date?
Hang on, let me find it. It's in September. The 21st of September.
Okay, listeners.
It's a Wednesday. You know what? I get it's a school night, but the sales are diabolical. And
the Keaveney Massive, the people who love me, we have various hotspots like Bristol, like Brighton, like Glasgow. Newcastle is one of them.
Mm.
So I imagine that you will notice a serious upswing once this goes out.
I think so.
And can I just say,
because I'm just looking at the sales, and we're very much under 1,000, and it's a 10,000 capacity venue. So,
well, listen, you know, in advance, you're welcome, because once this goes out, it's going to go through the roof. And we can't wait for bins.
Out. It's a great worry. I'm just looking at the sales. It's not. I mean, I'm hemorrhaging money.
You see, that's the sort of thing you could probably, knowing you and your meta mind, you could probably do a side stand-up tour, which is basically all about selling tickets for your Newcastle Arena gig.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine you coming up with a good 40 minutes on that.
I mean, I know this current show is about getting my house price up, so I suppose I was about to say it's a bit kind of self-indulgent, but literally everything I do is very self-indulgent, so I don't know why I'm...
It's so fucking, so funny, it's so brilliant, and it's we can't wait. More. How do you like it? Well, you got to go and find him, and you got to go and watch this show, because it's going to change your life like it changed his. But what a wonderful experience to go, to just have a quick riffle through the piffle with you, Joe, and your notes of pleasure. We'll do it again sometime.
I'd love to.
Thank you.
It didn't even touch the sides there, mate.
Well, exactly. This is the great thing about it. It's like a skip that never empties, isn't it? That's the way I like to see
That's
it.
That's really nice.
Joe Lycett, thank you for 1,000,000 times for being on today's Sean Keaveney's Creative Cul-de-Sac.
A great honour.
twice it. Oh my God, what a man. What a man. How do you follow it? You shouldn't follow it. You shouldn't attempt to follow it. This is bringing back awful PTSD memories of me having to go on after Dylan Moran and the comedy tent at the Latchy Festival and deliver a desultory 10-minute set to 6,000 people as they turned their back and walked away from me. The only people that were left in the audience, you might know this story, were ironically Clive and Ben, the people I'm now doing this podcast and Patreon with. So look at that. It says a lot though, doesn't it, about you know, sort of dedication to the cause and loyalty and bad comedy. Anyway, thank you, Joe. You're amazing. We like to finish the creative cul-de-sac with a couple of your lost ideas. And as I've said this before and I'll say it again, it seems to me a lot of you just aren't taking this seriously enough. But that said, some of the things that you're sending me are quite funny. Rachel Proud simply sent me an email, the title of which was Kebab Cab. And by way of explanation underneath, you might be there already, she says, it's a cab that comes to pick you up and it has a kebab rotisserie in the boot. I think that's a fucking good idea, that. If I was arseholed in 1993 and I could get home and have a kebab at the same time, oh yeah, I would pay top dollar for that service. Kebab a cab. Rachel, you are onto something, my dear. And we have to leave the final word to a man who's become quite prolific over the last couple of weeks, Alan Greening. I think he's gone a bit rogue, to be honest. I don't know if he's on the roof of John Lewis with some underpants on his head and a pair of pencils up his nose or something, but he's started sending out so many ridiculous ideas for satirical takes on television shows past and present that, but he's got a very high strike rate of ridiculous ideas. Like this, the AA team. A band of four ex-military mechanics drive around in a van helping out broken down motorists who've been wronged. To emphasise the AA bit, they're all Scousers. Hey. Okay, I get it now. Yeah, okay. Okay. And what's this? He's also sent, this is an idea, but perhaps this is a children's book, I don't know. The Very Hungry Human Centipede, oh dear. Vile Euro horror meets the beloved children's book. Story time for the kids will never be the same again. See what I mean? Not really taking it seriously. If you do have any ideas that are just sitting in a notebook, sitting on a laptop, sitting on your iPhone, a lyric, a sitcom idea, an invention, send them in. Sean's Creative Cul-de-sac at gmail.com. And if not, just make some shit up.